You're listening to the USCA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USCA eventing news. Welcome to the USCA official podcast episode 265. Now, listeners, we have got an absolutely brilliant episode coming your way. I'm so looking forward to this one. It's one we've been talking about doing for a little while, and it is all about how you can improve your dressage. And we are going to get it how you're basically going to be able to produce your best test, the tricks of the trade. And we have got two people on the show who will be giving you two different perspectives. It'll be very interesting to see what they agree on. They might disagree, who knows? But we will have both the judge's perspective and also the rider's perspective as well. So I will welcome our first guest. She was president of the grand jury at the Rio Olympic Games. She is a member of the FEI Eventing Committee. She has officiated at too many major championships and top events all over the world to list. But she definitely knows her stuff. Welcome to the show, Marilyn Payne.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
We are so looking forward to picking your brains and sort of digging a little bit into what you're looking for as a judge. And hopefully we'll be able to get some little nuggets of wisdom across to our listeners that they will all be able to put into practice. Sam Watson is my second guest. Sam, you might even learn a thing or two on this.
That is what I'm hoping, Nicole, because if you're resorting to Irish riders for advice on how to improve your dressage, then, you know, the world has changed. But I think what's interesting is I've said with probably every phase, even though I learned cross country from a really young age, I've definitely had to learn a lot in dressage and show jumping. And I think when you're a rider who has to learn it for themselves, that you didn't just sort of get on a horse and we're able to do it from the word go, and you don't know how you do it, you know, if you're not a genius, I think you can actually help people to you know, talk them through your journey and how you improved and what your approach is. But I'm definitely looking for tips to get better, for sure. Never stop.
I think that's a really important point, isn't it? Because actually, you can always get better in all of the phases, but particularly in the first phase. And it's a phase that we have certainly seen the standard of which has improved massively over the last sort of 15, 20 years. And certainly now there are some very, very smart dressage tests that take place in eventing all over the world that perhaps wouldn't look out of place in the pure discipline as well. So let's take a look. Should we start at the beginning? So before you go into your test, you need to warm up. So let's talk, Marilyn, a little bit as part of that process. We'll go through the whole pre-test, during your test, and post-test. So as a trainer, because you're a hugely respected trainer as well, what would you sort of look to work with your riders in terms of creating a warm-up for them? Do you have something that you sort of say, right, this is what you need to work on in the warm-up to get your best test? Or is it just a case of go through each of the different gates and then go in and do your test? How does that work from a training perspective for you?
Well, obviously, it's totally different from each horse and rider, what their warm-up is going to be. But you've got to get the horse in front of your leg. You've got to get him listening to you. You've got to get him supple and loose. But it's not about doing all the movements. I've got to do this movement. I've got to do that movement. What you need is to look at the quality of the way the horse is going, the quality of the walk, trot, and canter, and really try and get the horse listening to you. I do feel, though, that I can't tell you how many times people have said to me, oh, my God, my horse was so great in warm-up, so wonderful in warm-up. And I got in the test, and he got uptight and da-da-da, you know. And really, it's really the riders that do that. So the riders have to ride the horse in the test as they do in warm-up and really go confidently in there and do what they know how to do, ride the horse the way they know the horse knows needs to go. But as far as warm up, I think going around the outside of the ring is a good place to continue your warm up. Too many people go around the outside of the ring and they walk and they show the horse the judge, which is fine, but they just pet him and just, okay, we got to keep it quiet and they act like they're already being watched, and so they don't want to do anything to, you know, have the judge see what they're doing. And really, you need to go around that warm-up and get the horse tuned up. And most of my riders, I find, especially with the thoroughbreds, it's better to canter. Your canter will improve the trot. And so I always, with my horses and my students, 99% of them, we go and canter around the ring. And maybe you do a little counter-canter if you're an upper level. And you do transitions, and you do a little half-pass leg yield. You do what you need to do to get the horse tuned in. You canter, and then you come back to a trot, and then tune him in at the trot. If you have to do a little shallow serpentine down the side, or leg yields, or shoulder in, or a little shoulder in and a little medium, you've got to do what you need to do to get that horse listening to you and not worrying about what's all around outside the ring.
That's quite interesting. So just because obviously you do go down to the arena and you think, right, the judge is going to be watching me now. But actually, you're quite often at that point finishing off the rider before, aren't you?
The judge is never watching you. They have to keep up. There's so little time to write down all the comments and finish the test and get the next one ready and blow the whistle and go. You're really not watching the horse. And
really
I have to tell you, there are times I have watched where, say at Kentucky, you have more time at the big events. And so you have to stick to the time schedule, but the time schedule is more lenient. So you have time. You say, okay, I can't blow the whistle yet because I don't want to get ahead because it's being televised. And sometimes you do watch, but you never start judging. And I can tell you there are many times I see a horse go around the ring and they buck and leap and you think, oh, this might not be a good test, and then they come in and they nail it. So you never start judging the horse until they come down the center line.
It's a real skill, isn't it? Being able to judge exactly what you see at that point. And I think another point to make on that is actually you have from when the whistle goes, the bell goes, the horn goes, whatever that signal is, is it 45 seconds or 40 seconds?
Yeah, 45 seconds. And that is a long time. And I do say with my students, I will time them. I'll say, okay, I'm blowing the whistle now, just when we're practicing. And they are amazed at how long 45 seconds is. And you see smart riders come to turn down the center line and the horse is uptight or breaks to a canter or whatever. And they just, oh, by the way, we're just circling. We're not going down the center line. And you take your time. Don't rush it.
No, and then you can go in and start your test in the best possible way. Sam, from your perspective, obviously you've warmed up at every level of event, all the way through to the World Equestrian Games and the very, very top level. Do you have a set plan? Is that something that you've worked on with your trainers for your warm-up that you tailor to each of your individual horses?
Not really, actually, Nicole. I mean, I agree with Marianne. It's definitely different for different horses. And we've deviated from the plan like more often than you think at championships because, you know, every championship is different. The weather is different. You get a lot of time with the horses. So, you know, by the time you do your test at a championship, like certainly when we're going to, like I've done two WEGs in America, like those horses have been through quarantine. They've been at the venue for like pretty much a week before you do the test. So what you thought might be, you know, quite a warm up with quite a workload in it. Maybe if you had a horse that way, who got better with work, but you might find that actually come the championship that no, they don't need it at all. The only thing that I would say is common is let your horse warm up. Like the first thing you do, you've got to respect, like think of yourself in the morning. It doesn't need to be perfect from the word go. And if you try and make a horse be perfect, that's where kind of tension creeps in and every, because they're the exact same as us. And in fact, they're elite athletes that are really fit. You know, their body has been through a lot to get to competitions. And there's nothing wrong with just starting to get loose, get moving. And then you start to, you're building. You are building for what has now become, like I would say dressage is is one of the toughest phases in terms of like athleticism, you know, to maintain the quality of work that we do in the arena now, like it's hard work for the horse. So actually sometimes when I go into the arena and start to ride a ring, ride around the ring, that can be the first time that I actually ask for the most amount of engagement that I've had through the whole, I've been building to that point. And that might be the first time that I really switch it on, because I know that the horse might not be ready to do 20 minutes of really switched on, really top level work. Particularly the younger, you know, the horses at their first championship, they're maybe 9 or 10, they're unlikely to be able to really hold the top level work for a longer period of time. So the warm up is about bringing them to that point. And I'd also agree with Marilyn that, you know, if you're relying on the half hour before your test to practice movements, you know, you've got to have a look at your training. You know, it should be absolutely about preparing to execute the test. You know, there'll be some horses I don't need to ride some of them don't need to ride a flying change, or they don't need to practice a rein back, or, you know, that will all be there if the basics are in place and, you know, you've kind of been through your warm up. Obviously, most of the movements are designed to help with your horse's engagement and suppleness and everything. So like I do like quite a lot of lateral work and stuff, but it is different, and less can be more. Two of my best tests have come from really doing way less in the warm-up than I thought I'd do. You know, I was trotting around, getting the horse loose and supple, and because they'd been there for a few days, they were just feeling great. And I was like, God, the minute I asked them for more, more was there, and they were, you know, everything was where I needed it to be. So I didn't overdo it. Did plenty of walking, and then in we went and switched it on and produced the test.
Many, many times people leave their best test in the warm-up, because they're trying to drill. And then by the time they get to the ring, you don't realize how much it takes out of these horses. You think they're fit, you know, they can do the cross country, but it takes an awful lot of physical and mental stress to do a dressage test. So you don't want to leave your best in the warm up. I think that's a good idea.
I think it is, horses are different, aren't they? At the end of the day, don't be afraid to try something a little bit different, because everybody is different. Find what works for you. And if you try it and it doesn't work, well, you know, for next time that actually that wasn't quite the case for you, and you might need a little bit longer, or you might need a little bit less time. But if you don't try it, you don't know. Let's go on to into the test. So we've already talked about actually when you, Marilyn, are going around the outside of the arena, you're not judging them. However, one of the things that I wanted to ask you was, a lot of people, Michael Young in particular, always makes some serious eye contact with the judges before he goes into his test. Is that something that you like? Do you like that people come around and acknowledge you and are smiley and happy and say hello? Is that something that you do notice?
Well, what you do like is that someone has a positive look on their face. Like, they may look at you, but like, okay, get ready, you're going to see a good test. You know, I'm ready to go, and I'm going to show this horse off. What you don't like is when someone goes around the ring and they don't give you eye contact, and they're looking down like, oh my gosh, the horse is so tense, and this isn't going to work. And, you know, you've got to be positive. That will transfer to the horse. You've got to be very positive and not negative. You've got to be looking for the best and riding for the best. But on the same token, there are sometimes people come around, oh, say good morning, Marilyn, how are you? You know, like, okay, that's a little much. That's okay. And you just ignore it. I mean, you're not going to take them down for it, but like, okay, you don't need to do that.
So a nice positive smile is a good thing. We don't need to have a chat about the weather.
No.
There we go. Okay, there you go, listeners. That is the first thing before you go into the arena. You're not being judged yet, and you can have a nice positive start, but don't be too chatty. That would definitely be my downfall. Okay, so you're coming in to do your test then. Marilyn, as a judge, what are the key things, regardless of the level that you are judging at, what are the key things that you are particularly looking for?
Well, your first and last center line are the first impression and your last impression. And you want to nail those, because, you know, judges are just human. And if you come down that center line looking ahead, very positively riding, say, okay, here I come. Wait till you see this test. It makes the judge think, okay, subconsciously you're thinking this is going to be a good test. And so you're getting the higher scores ready in your head without realizing it. You know, it's not on purpose you're doing this, but, you know, you want to set the stage. And then the same for the final halt. You come down the center line, and if you look like, oh my God, that was awful. You know, the judge hasn't done the final remarks at the end and the final comment. And so subconsciously, if you're thinking it's bad, the judge is subconsciously thinking, oh, maybe it wasn't so good. And if they were between, oh, I'm going to give a 7 or a 6.5, they'd probably go to the 6.5 because they want you to know that they understand and that you agree with them. But really what you wanted is a show. Let's show it off, you know, be positive about the whole thing. So that's one of my biggest pet peeves.
Okay, first and last impression. That is very, very good advice. Sam, is that something that you're aware of, particularly as a rider?
Yeah, the first thing I would say is ride. You when you're riding a test in the arena, it's one of the few things where like this should be exactly what you're doing at home, because it's, you know, it's not changing. It's not like you get there and Marilyn starts shouting, now do 4 time changes across the diagonal. And you're like, whoa, where did that come from? Was not expecting that. It's like, you know what's going to happen. And I do, like, I always want to have that real presence. You know, when I enter, I want to be looking like I'm owning it. And I want the horse to have a brilliant canter. And I am actually saying to myself, I want this to be a brilliant test. Now, I don't just do that when I get to a competition, because that would all be changed. That would be like, oh, for the first time I'm sitting up, that's a different feeling for the horse. You know, for the first time we're cantering with a really good quality canter. I do that every time I ride a test at home. And I ride, like, I'm doing more and more test riding than I used to. I guess that comes with progression as well, in that my foundation, I probably needed to do way more work on my basics and my foundations and get that right. And now with that better, I can do more test riding. But that's what I'm thinking. Like when I ride at home, I'm like, is this the best it's ever been? You know, are you owning it? Are you owning this first center line? That's going through my head, because I know it's going to be going through my head at a competition. So rather than, I guess there's two approaches. You could be at the competition, you'll go, I'm just going to do what I do at home. I'm just at home, you know, and you can pretend you're at home. I like to pretend when I'm at home, I like to pretend I'm at a competition, because that, so then it's basically the same. You're training how you're going to compete. I love that. I think it's really important that you are putting on a display. Like, that is absolutely, you're trying to get the judge to hit those big marks. And you're not going to do that by just kind of quietly being in your own little shell, keeping your head down and trying to get your horse on the bit and potter around and do your movements. You know, you're going to go in there by putting on a really good display of dressage.
Yeah, that's a very good point you make, Sam, is that you've got to practice it at home. I don't know who it was that said, practice doesn't make perfect, but perfect practice makes perfect. And you've got to ride at home the way you want the horse to go in the show. And the other thing that people don't do is they'll do shoulder in after shoulder in after shoulder in, or half pass after half pass until they get it right. But it's one thing to do one half pass, but to do a half pass and then change direction and then do a medium trot. And then, you know, the sequence of the movements is much more difficult than just doing one movement. And many people don't practice that.
Do you find that practicing the test that you're going to do, because obviously there are only limited number of tests at each level, do you practice them all, the ones that you're going to do, Sam? Do you practice different tests that have the same movements in? Are you ever worried that a horse would actually start to anticipate what is coming next? Or is that a good thing?
No, I mean, again, it depends on the horses. And I find you can break down the tests a little bit. Like when that Tokyo test, is a really busy test. I know most people maybe haven't seen it yet, but everything comes up pretty quick, and you can deconstruct it and kind of break things down. But if you have a horse who's still, you know, those flying changes maybe aren't still established, and you know they're much better to not be anticipating one, particularly in the place you're going to do it, then you know eventually you're going to get that horse to a point where you can go through it and they're not going to anticipate it, they're not going to be tense about it. But if that's the stage they're at right now, then it's better to be clever about it and not practice it at that point. But you can, you know, there are some horses, and I do think it's really good for riders to go through the test as much as you can, as long as you're not, but don't just like do it purposefully, you know, do it with, have the video on, get the feedback as well. Like that's one of the things that we're big about when we were designing On Form, that the video analysis tool is that it's so easy to share with your coach or share with a dressage judge and get their perspective on it. So you're not just, don't practice your mistakes. That's not going to do anyone any good. So just test riding and feeling like you're not getting any better. That's, you know, you should be delivering that test and then figuring out, okay, what needs to be better, get the feedback, and go and work on it and make a plan. And if you don't know what's going to make a movement better, if you're just doing pretty average to poor shoulder ins time after time, that's what coaches are for and trainers are for, you know, talk to them and make a plan.
That was a good point about horses anticipate. And there are some horses that really anticipate, but I still would do say a canter half pass. And then I'd say, okay, we're going to do canter canter now. We're not doing a change. And then I do a canter canter, you know, maybe do the same sequence of movements, but don't do the same movement. You know, so the horse is always thinking, okay, oh, we're going to do this. Oh, we're going to do that. So you have the horse on the aids and listening and waiting for you to tell him what to do.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And actually, I guess by doing this at home as well, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is what to do when things go wrong. But by doing it at home, you can't, as much as you would love in a test to start again if things haven't gone to plan, obviously you can't do that. You have to carry on. So it's quite useful at home to practice that as well. Yes, you're training, but also you have to learn how to deal with the situation if it isn't exactly going to plan. And Marilyn, that's one of the questions that I know we had a few listeners send in is, what do they do if things aren't going to plan in their test? If either they've had a big spook or something has gone wrong, or that the horse has got a lot of tension or is behind the leg. As a judge, obviously each movement is marked individually, but what would you like to see people do?
Well, I would like them to ride the horse the way they would at home. So if the horse is behind your leg and you put your leg on and nobody's home, you know, we end up there are people that just sit there like, oh, I don't want the judge to see that I'm trying, that he's lazy. And they just sit there pretending like, oh, he's fine, but he's really not. Or we have people that are nagging like leg, 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 leg. Instead, well, I know in FEI you can't carry a whip, but in the national you can carry a whip. And instead, if they're not listening, give them a tap. Give them a couple taps, you know. Or if you can't carry a whip, give them a good kick. Hey, hello, tune in. And make your correction. And if it doesn't go well, so you kick him or you tap him, and maybe he bucks or whatever. But then regroup. The next movement is probably going to be much better because now he's in front of your leg. So you're already not going to get a good score in that movement. So don't worry about it and just go on to the next one. But on the other hand, there are times when horses maybe get uptight or maybe buck or because they're just so full of it. And the one thing we hate to see is a rider just stopping them and, you know, really strong with their aids and getting more mad at the horse. And instead, you've got to be very tactful and tactfully correct it and get the horse's confidence back, because horses are very sensitive and there are more tests than I want to remember that people have gotten after the horse, like trying to punish them for doing something wrong. And the horses aren't trying to do something wrong. They're just uptight. You know, it's a mental thing. And the madder you get at them, the tougher you get on them, the worse they get. And it just builds and builds and builds. And instead, you've got to chill yourself and just, okay, let's take a deep breath and let's move on with it.
Yeah, I like that point about the relaxation in the rider. I think one of the big words I use a lot now is trust. And the horse has to really, when you look at those really top tests and when those horses are really performing, they are like, they're putting in that effort because they want to, they want to perform and they're really happy. Like they're relaxed enough to be able to actually use their bodies that much. And they're mentally so calm and relaxed in there. Like a horse is not going to give you a really nice supple half pass if he's worried that he's going to get, you know, a chuck in the mouth with your hand or a, you know, some kind, you know, some sort of telling off where you're suddenly going to out of nowhere, you know, pull them up, as Marilyn says, you know, it's, and so if they do make a mistake, even if they spook, I think one of the I've had notoriously spooky horses, and the reason that I sort of can work with them and get a good tune out of them is that I just take a very reasoned approach to the whole thing. That like if a horse is afraid of something, I don't need to add more fear into their life by really shouting at them and getting mad. You know, like that is not going to help the situation. You know, you need to bring some structure. It's like a good teacher. You know, you need to say, okay, we're not getting away with that and it's okay, but you need to be fair at all times, fair, and then trust it kind of evolves from that. And then the dressage arena is a happy place for the horse to be. So if you make mistakes and you know that, you know, the chance of winning is possibly out of the window, and you know you're disappointed and you're a bit frustrated, you've got to put that to one side. That is not going to do you any good. It's really not. The only thing that is going to do you good is resolving the situation and getting the best out of the next movement that's coming. And that's probably, if your horse has had a spook or something like that, it's probably going to be through trying to get that horse to relax. So stay, relax yourself, take a deep breath and get on with the show.
Yeah, I know as judges, you see something happening, a problem occurs. And so it's a 4 or 3 or 2 or 1. And then the good riders will just put that behind them. Say, okay, now let's try and get it better. And each movement, it builds. And then you end up giving high scores. I mean, I think it's great when you give a 9 and a 1 in the same test. I mean, that is a good rider and a good horse. You know, things happen and the judges understand things happen. And so I think riders are thinking that the judges are, oh, they're going to, you know, they don't like this, they don't like that. Well, we're all rooting for them. We want to see good movements. We want to give good scores. And so I can't tell you how many times I've like, oh, God, that's too bad. You know, like you really are upset, I mean, maybe not as upset as the rider, but you're upset like, oh my gosh, that's too bad. And then they regroup and keep going. And yes, good for you, you know, and then you can give them the high scores again. You know, you're looking to give them the high scores to say, yes, good for you. You know, you recovered and now you're showing us what you can do.
I think that's good judging as well, is using that range of marks and being able to say, no, that movement is one movement, and then the next movement is another movement entirely, and you're judging each one as you see. Sam, how much do you pay attention when you're learning a test to the each individual movement so you know what the marks are for? So say there is a halt and a rein back, that you know if they're marked together separately, that kind of thing. Do you really take note of that? I'm sure you're going to say that you absolutely do on this.
I'll go one better, Nicole. I'll even give you an example of.
Go on then.
Well, I got annoyed with it the other day because I have the video evidence, but our first international was about 10 days ago. There's in the 3-star test, there's a new 3-star test, and we've got to go across the diagonal in medium canter. And then there's a really short, it's just literally from, I think, the P marker to K, if that's right, I'm getting my, but it's literally just 12 meters of counter canter. And in the test, that is down as being a separate move. You know, there's 10 marks for that counter canter. And I made a mistake on my medium canter, but I had everything corrected just before that marker. So, and I was really aware that I needed to, for that to happen. You know, I needed to be back in counter canter to get those 10 marks, because that was the next movement. So that's where it's good to know your test. Now I got 2 threes for the 2 movements, and I was like, I'm sure I was good. I was sure I was all back in the, but maybe the quality of my counter just wasn't good enough. But yeah. It is important.
I think the judge just didn't know the test. They're all new tests, so it's hard. The judge wasn't sure.
I know, and it's really useful to know. You will be surprised when you read through some of those tests how many like not every movement is kind of equal effort. Like there are some pretty quick wins in terms of 10 marks here or there where you're like, oh wow, if I just nail that movement, like there's 10 marks going for just that bit. Whereas other times you could be like, whoa, I've got to do a half circle and a half pass. And, you know, there could be quite a lot in a movement for your 10 marks. So, I mean, look, you're at the end of the day, you're trying to get the most out of every movement, but in that situation where something's gone astray, it's useful enough to know
where things start and end. Absolutely. Actually, yeah. Marilyn, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, now seems a good time to do it, but obviously the tests are created by people such as yourself who have judged at the very top level and trained at the very top level. I know that you've been involved in creating some of the FEI tests. Just talk us through that process, because there is always method to sort of how they are created, isn't there? It isn't simply a case of, oh, well, I think they'll go up the center line, they'll track left, et cetera, et cetera. There is a real method. You have a lot that you want to into 4 or 5 minutes.
You have a panel, right? You've got a panel of maybe half a dozen judges from all around the world that are on a committee that put these together. And usually what we do is we discuss ahead of time what we like, what we don't like, what we need to change about the tests in the previous years, like the flying changes that the judges couldn't see. So we have to take those flying changes and put them somewhere where the judge can see it better. But what we did, we divided it up, and 2 judges were together and did, okay, they did 3 stars, 2 others did 4 star, and they collaborated together and came up with tests. And then that gets sent to the whole committee, and then it's changed a million times. You know, someone says, no, I think this really works well, but this isn't going to work too well. And then once we all agree on, okay, these are the tests, then we go out there and ride them. If most of the judges are riders and trainers themselves, and so they go out and ride them. They have students ride them. They ride them on every type of horse, green horses, experienced horses, to see how it really flows and is there something we need to change. And we also have them judged. We judge them, so you have students ride them and you judge them, so you can see, oh, you really can't see that movement, you know, maybe we should try and change that. So it takes a long, long time. Until it takes a couple of years by the time you get the test actually finished enough to put out there. And we also try to get feedback from riders before we even start, and we do have riders on the committee also that have helped with these tests.
I think it's a really interesting process. I remember it, was it badminton a couple of years ago, and the new 5-star test came out. It might have even been a 4-star at the time still, and they came down the final center line in canter, then they went to trot and to halt. And right. The first time it was done, people really struggled with it. They didn't quite get it. And it seems very bizarre that at 5-star level, canter to trot would be so troublesome. But actually, it did exactly what I think was sort of intended, in that making sure that everybody was very correct. And then yet the next 5-star, everybody came down that center line and absolutely nailed their canter to trot transition. They'd been doing their homework, and you could really tell. And the improvement was enormous.
And it's a good point. We try to design tests so that it improves the horses and improves the schooling, because you know, whatever you put in the test, people are going to train at home.
Yeah.
And so that canter to trot came because everyone was going canter, halt, canter, halt, canter, halt. And the horse was just, they knew to halt, and they would just dive on their forehand. You know, it wasn't correct. And so that's why we added the canter trot to to say, can you keep the horse up in front and going forward, freely forward, and not anticipating. And the one thing that was added to tests also was the stretching, the long and low.
Yeah.
Because too many people weren't training that at home enough, and were riding the horses and just holding them and driving them and pushing them into a frame, but the horse wasn't really over its back and really confident and relaxed and wanting to stretch into the contact. So that's why we added those. And at first people couldn't do it, and now they can, you know. So it's all about the horse. We care about the horse, and we care about the correct training, and you want the basics to be brought out, that people ride the correct basics from the beginning.
Absolutely. There you go, listeners. There is method. When you're next trotting down the center line, there is a method behind the test that you are about to do. Okay, let's just, before we go on to after a test. So, Sam, I know that this is something that you've worked on. You mentioned on form a little bit earlier on, but how you can improve. So you've done your test, and now it's a case of going, right, okay, I've got my judge's comments. What can I do now to make my next test better, or what can I learn from? What do you really look at? Do you compare your test quite a lot? Do you sit down with your trainer? How does that work for you?
Yeah, we'll start by reading the test sheet, because I've always had a motto of my sort of process of as a competitor has been about try, fail, learn. You know, you've got to put in the effort. You will make mistakes, and then you learn. And that's a cycle. That's how we improve in skill sports. And then I had a really interesting conversation actually with Laurent Bousquet, who said to me, the learning is not automatic. You know, you don't automatically learn from failure. He's like, some people won't learn from failure because they don't accept it and they don't understand it. And I think that is really appropriate to dressage, is that accept your mark. That is someone's opinion. And it's not just anyone's opinion. You know, it's someone who's watched hundreds and thousands of dressage tests and knows what they're talking about. So you should accept it. And I've definitely been in the camp of not accept, you know, I definitely spent time when I was like, oh, 36, just because I really want a 28. Doesn't mean that I necessarily deserved it. And don't just obsess on the mark and not try and firstly accept what you got and then try and understand. Like, understanding is definitely the next bit. So getting the feedback, some of it's there on the sheet. I like to, in a nice way, when the opportunity presents itself, and even may have done a really good test and got a really good mark. If I see a grand jury member and, you know, it's an appropriate time, and then I'll say, oh, can you just, you know, any feedback on my test? Because, you know, it might be the last thing they want if they've just been judging a full day of dressage. So, you know, not necessarily standing there when they need a toilet break or a drink or something. But choose your moments and try and get that feedback. Because that is how you learn. And then, yes, the coach is another source. If you can have the test videoed, it's a huge advantage because you get to see it back and then you can get someone else's opinion. But this is all about learning. And I think, you know, from a stats point of view, the scores in dressage have just improved year on year so consistently. And it's because we can all, you know, we are all watching our tests, like the video. The smartphones were a huge training tool that became available. Like, the minute we could all see our tests back, that just opens the door to learning, because now you're able to see it for yourself. You're not just going, oh, well, I thought it was great and they don't know what they're talking about, which was kind of the old days. Now it's watch it back, you know, try and understand how it can be better.
Marilyn, I think that's a really good point, actually, because you've just talked about everything about creating the test is about improving the horse's way of going and training. And ultimately, you are rooting for everybody to get better and to get the better marks. As a judge, it must give you a massive amount of sort of pleasure and job satisfaction if you have been able to give somebody some feedback that they can then go away, work on, that they'll come out next time and improve.
Oh, absolutely. And judges really try to do their best, and you try to give good comments so that the writer understands why you're coming up with the score you are and what they need to do to improve. And unfortunately, there's not enough time to really write down everything you want to say. And many times your scribe doesn't keep up and they don't even write it all down. And so it's confusing to the writer, but it is a very good idea to sit down and look at your tests. And I know that there are a lot of writers that don't, and especially if you don't have a good test, they don't even pick their tests up, which is very upsetting to a judge because you try your hardest to give the correct comment and the scores so that the writers learn. Every judge has something helpful to say. Whether you agree or not, what you should do is look at it and try to analyze it and say, okay, yeah, I guess maybe I needed more bend or more engagement, or yeah, maybe I was using my hands too much. Don't say, they don't know what they're talking about. And it's really good to read those comments and try and say, okay, I'm going to work on this. I'm going to work on this and see if I can get this part better. There are judges. Sometimes judges have higher scores or lower scores. You have two judges and one might score you a little higher or a little lower than the other. But that's their scale. And if they keep that same scale with every rider, the competition is placed in the right order. So don't just think because they gave a lower score, they're not correct. Look at the lower score and say, okay, what can I do to make this score better? Because their comments are probably very helpful many times. And you'll say, okay, I've got to change this. You know, don't just agree with the judge that gave you the high scores. It also depends on where the judges are sitting. And you've got to understand that when you're sitting at C, it's a totally different picture than when you're sitting on the side. So you don't think, oh, that judge on the side is really too harsh. It may not be, but they're just seeing something different than the judge at C is. And that's totally acceptable.
It's the whole point, isn't it? At the end of the day, you want to see the movements from different angles and different perspectives, which is why you have multiple judges at different points of the arena.
Absolutely. And too many people think that we all have to have the same score. Even judges, you know, like they get upset if, oh my gosh, you know, 5 points different than you. But really, when you sit down, because every time, and maybe many people don't know this, if you're 5% different, you sit down and you take the test, and each judge has to go through that. We go through the test and go through every comment and score we gave to see why we were different. One, to educate maybe have some younger judges or less experienced judges, and it'll be a good experience for them and a good learning experience. But most times what you find is that maybe you're a half a point different on every score, or 1 point different, even 1 point different. 1 point different, that's a giant difference. That's 10%. That's between having a 70% and a 60% if you're 1 point different. So when you're a half a point different, it's 5%. And you wouldn't think that would be a big deal if I say 7 and another judge says 7.5. So that's not a big difference, but it ends up 5% if you keep doing it all along. So I just want to let people know that the judges do look at that when the scores are different. We must sit down and take the tests and go through them score by score and comment by comment to make sure that not that we're going to change it. You cannot change it. And once in a while, a judge misses something, you know, and the flying changes, you blink for 1 second and you miss it. And so you might give a higher score and someone else would say, oh, it's late behind. And they were right. But, you know, we're only human and it's easy to make a mistake.
I think that's really important. Judges are human, and there is always going to be the odd error because that is human. At the end of the day, it isn't a robot judging your test, but ultimately you have to accept that anybody judging it is highly qualified. There is method as to how they're doing it. They're following a set test and the movements in it. And ultimately, listeners, even if you don't always agree, learn from it. As Marilyn and Sam have both said, go away, learn from it, take what you can and improve next time.
I think a really interesting, because I, again, like the, as a numbers person, I have very little emotion. But what I would say is if you...
He really does business.
if I gave you a task that you were going to watch 100 dressage tests and somewhere in there I was going to throw the same test in twice, how much would you be willing to bet that you give that same test the same mark for every movement? And there could be 56 tests in between, you know, that distort how you... you know, what time of day it is, but, or anything like that. But even what you're looking, you know, sometimes I can look at my own tests and I go, wow, the horse is so active and so engaged, really moving well today. And other days I'm looking at I can look at that exact same piece of work and I can be, oh, that, you know, this contact, the contact is just, the connection is not good enough, you know, or he's just not quite supple enough. And your eye can be drawn to different things in like a 2 second period to look at the overall thing. It's probably not going to be that different, but as Marilyn said, like you could even be a full mark out, and a full mark is a big difference, as Marilyn has said. And what you find in dressage now is people are making less and less mistakes. We're all pretty well trained, so if you're a half mark out, you'll see an awful lot of tests now, particularly from the top riders, where you don't get much of a chance to kind of deviate from that. If that's where you feel the kind of the level is at, you tend to stick in and around that. We used to be pretty haphazard kind of 10 years ago, where it would be, you know, big kind of catastrophic mistakes and things would go up and down quite a lot. But now we kind of come in and produce a pretty fault free round. So you just have to gauge, you know, are they at a 7? Are they at a 7.5? Are they at a 6.5? And it's not easy. So I would definitely have sympathy with the judges from that point of view.
I'd say judging is a hard job, to be fair. Like it is a difficult job.
Well, you try to be fair, but you have to be on from 8 in the morning until 5 at night. And you try to give 100% to every test, but mentally that's difficult, you know, like late in the day, late in the afternoon, you know, it's really hard to keep your focus. And so you try as best you can to judge exactly the same from morning to night. But
what's your
it's a skill.
What's your booster, Marilyn? Are you a Red Bull person, a caffeine person, a chocolate brownie person, jelly babies?
Oh, yeah, chocolate's good in the afternoon. Pick you up.
Yeah. Okay.
Or a little caffeine. yeah.
Before, I find that really interesting. And actually, one thing I would say, listeners, is if you are in a position whereby you can volunteer at a local event and you get the chance to sit in and scribe for a dressage judge, which obviously at the moment with COVID is a little bit different to how it would normally be, you're sat right next to each other scribing, but go and do it, because you will learn so much from sitting next to a judge and watching all of these different tests. So take the opportunity if you can and go and do it, because you will really learn a huge amount and you'll see it from a different perspective as well. A couple of things. One, I've got one final question for you, Marilyn, and then I'm going to come to you both for your top 3 tips on how to produce a good test and impress the judge. But first, Marilyn, I had a question sent in from a listener, and it is basically about fashion choices and turnout. Do you notice it? Does it bother you? Do you have any preferences, or are you looking at more the overall picture and the way of going, as opposed to somebody's flashy brow band or flashy stock or anything like that?
That's a good question. I honestly don't notice the turnout. Unless if it's really not good, if it's disheveled looking, you know, you might notice that. Or if it's really overly done. I mean, there have been times in the past where when this bling came in, someone would trot down the center line and it would be sunny and you'd be seeing the bling on the helmet and on the stock and on the belt and on, you're like, oh my God, you know, and it's so distracting. That distracts you and you try and wipe it out, but you can't concentrate on the horse with all this bling. But honestly, you know, whether how the braiding is, you know, if they really look neat and tidy, it's an overall good impression. And it looks like, okay, they're ready, they're prepared, yeah. But you're not consciously trying to, you don't evaluate their turnout. But if it's a neat turnout, it gives you the impression that the rider is neat and that the rider is trained that way. You know, yes. They're meticulous about their look and they're meticulous about their training.
Yeah, absolutely. And they've made the effort. But listeners, if you've got a lot of bling and it is a sunny day, just think before you go down the center line. Sam, that's a tip for you, Sam Watson. Next time you go to put all your bling on, just think about what the weather's doing.
I just try not to let down my wife, who has turned my horse out immaculately every time. And I just have to try and make sure that I'm not too scruffy.
Okay, top tips, producing a good turnout. Sam, I'll come to you first. What would be your three top tips? It can be as part of your warm-up, after your test, in the arena, anything. Go.
Okay, I say allow your horse to warm up. So don't go for perfection straight away. And obviously remember that where you want perfection is in the ring, not in the warm-up, as we've both said. But allow your horse to warm up. Don't go for too much too quickly. I would say practice being in the ring. So that's a home thing. So from, you know, you should have whiteboards or access to a dressage arena and practice everything about being in the, you know, practice the warm-up, practice the psychological point of view, because that's going to get you more than the horse, but practice being in the ring. That would be my tip there. And then review and feedback. You've got to learn, accept it, be a learner. Do not be the person who gets their back up when someone says something. One of the most helpful things was one of my friends, Camilla Spears, saying to me before my test at Campfire with Imperial Sky, "Sam, you're just rushing him a little bit. I saw you working him earlier. He looks great, but would you not just steady it a little bit and produce his best ever test and won the Nations Cup class there?" You know, feedback is a good thing. Don't be afraid of it. In fact, invite it, welcome it, and yes. Seek it. Go for it.
Constructive criticism is a positive thing. Don't take it as a negative. Brilliant. We like those. Marilyn, how about you?
Well, I have to agree with Sam, even though we'd like to disagree, but we can't. you've got to practice in an arena. There are so many times, and in warm-up, also, people use this giant warm-up area and they just go around and around and around. And then they get in this tiny little sandbox and the horse and rider both panic. You've got to be able to ride in a small arena and you've got to practice in the arena so that you're comfortable feeling that. And if you can go to dressage shows or, you know, some schooling dressage shows, or just make it yourself and say, okay, we're going to do a test today. And practice riding the test and practice things going wrong. And how are you going to deal with that? No, you're not going to circle. You can't circle and do a do-over. You've got to figure out how to handle it right there and then and do the best you can with what you've got. Because too many times people just keep trying and trying and trying. Oh, I got to do that movement again and again. Nope, you can't. It's gone. You've got to move on. And I think at the show, you've got to ride it in the test the same way you ride at home. You're not going to change it. You're not going to now say, okay, I'm going to go for a fabulous medium trot. And the horse doesn't have a fabulous medium trot. So don't go for it. Go do the best that horse can do that day. And I think Sam brought this up before. He was talking about knowing what movements, what score and what movements, where the boxes are. And there are sometimes people think about, okay, my changes are just so terrible. And they just drill the darn changes to death and get the horse all uptight. And you know what? It's only two scores out of the whole test. Two scores. They don't have coefficients. So if you blow your movement, maybe it's late behind, but the rest of the test is stellar. Yes, you're going to get fours there. But you can make up for it in other places. So I think you need to drill also what you do well. And don't go for a 7. Get an 8. I mean, there are horses that have fabulous walks. And go for the 8 on the walk. And don't go for the 6 or the 7. You know, so practice what you do well as what you need to work on, but don't drill like crazy and drive the horse crazy and you crazy. And it's just being very positive, having a positive attitude the whole time, you know, and say, I can do this, you know, and giving the horse the confidence that they can do it.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, we're doing this for fun, right?
It is meant to be fun. Go in and enjoy it. Have a nice time. And do you know what? If it doesn't go to plan, then next time it might. So don't take away all the enjoyment from it. Go in with a plan and take what you can from that test. I've got one actually that Shane Rose, the Australian rider, actually put forward as part of the Riders Connected campaign at the start of, obviously, COVID in the last few months. And his tip was at home. We've obviously talked about do a test at home, treat it as if it is a test, but actually go one step further than that. Give yourself a time. So your test is going to be at X time and literally work back from that all the way to you getting dressed, your horse being tacked up, everything, so that that process becomes familiar for you at home. So you're not at a show thinking, oh my God, I haven't put my studs in. It's going to take me another 15 minutes. And then I'm running late and then I'm stressed and the horse gets tense and and it all goes wrong. So practice that at home as well, because that could be really useful and help battle with the nerves too. Marilyn, Sam, thank you both so much.
You're so welcome.
I honestly, I have learned so much. Listeners, I really hope you have as well, because there is so much to take from this show. And we hope that you will be able to deploy it in your upcoming tests and in the future, and that you'll find them useful. If you do, let us know. We would love to know how you get on. Don't forget, when you listen to this, tag us at US Eventing, and we would love your feedback as well. But a huge thank you to both Sam and Marilyn. And we'll be back with another episode of the USEA official podcast very soon. But thank you, listeners, for listening. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you. Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.